Hey y'all. So when it comes to bodies, weight loss is not really something that I'm pursuing right now. But as you know, one of Vanessa's family members has been taking a GLP-1 medication, and it's worked really well for him. So if that is part of your journey, you should check out the Row Body Program. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Row's partner handles all the insurance paperwork to help get the medication covered. If eligible for medication, patients have access to their provider on demand for any questions. Go to ro.co/infamous. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/infamous.
Campsite Media.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into Infamous this week. I'm Vanessa Grigoriadis.
I'm Natalie Robomet.
So while we were looking into Meghan Markle, something very strange, as everyone knows, was happening with a different British princess, Kate Middleton.
Right. According to the internet, which you could definitely say broke over this, Kate Middleton went missing. The palace said she was in hospital for a planned abdominal surgery, but then she wasn't seen in public for months, which is really, really rare for a royal.
And then came this absolutely bizarre photoshopped picture of her with her kids and all these weird reports of sightings before Kate finally revealed that she had been diagnosed with cancer. Now, of course, this is incredibly sad, and it makes a lot more sense why she would want her privacy while navigating this kind of life-changing news.
But it's also a very revealing moment in the royal family's relationship with the press, telling us so much about what they can control and what they can't.
So we're going to get into all things Meghan and Kate with one of the foremost royal chroniclers this week, a woman who has penned a bunch of famous articles and books, particularly about the monarchy. She's the author of such lines as, "Beneath the yummy mummy exterior, Kate has a spine of steel. In many ways, she's reminiscent of the late Queen Mother, whom Cecil Beaton described as a marshmallow made on a welding machine." Just ponder that image for a minute.
And just to note, this interview was recorded before Kate revealed her cancer diagnosis, so please bear that in mind.
My name is Anna Pasternak, and I'm a writer and royal biographer. I wrote the seismic book many, many years ago, 27 years ago, Princess in Love, about Princess Diana's relationship with her riding instructor, Captain James Hewitt. And then more recently, I wrote American Duchess, The Real Wallis Simpson. And I feel that having written both those books, I've got a pretty good understanding of how the British monarchy works, and especially how they treat incoming women.
Part of why I really wanted to talk to you is because of your Tatler profile of Kate, which I thought was just so fantastic.
Well, yes, it was the beginning of lockdown, and I was asked by Tatler to do a, you know, colourful piece on Kate, and what they didn't want was a puff piece.
Great.
And this piece created the most enormous backlash. I just could not believe it. And one of the things that was levelled at me was that I had said that Kate was perilously thin. I mean, you know, as I was thinking of Tom Wolfe and New York social x-rays or Hollywood stars, they're all size zeros, they're all perilously thin, and that's kind of a compliment. Yes, my piece did have a very snobby side. I'm writing for Tatler. It was an article I thought would be sort of tossed aside by, you know, toffs in stately homes in Britain. And anyway, everyone went berserk about that. And Kate and William said they were going to sue Tatler. So I had 4 months in which I was rung up by the Tatler managing director and told, and I had the world's media saying, you know, please, can you speak, please? And I was told, please don't speak. So for 4 months, I did not speak, which was very annoying because I had another book to publish. Whatever wouldn't interview me because they said, we can't talk to you unless you discuss Tat
no,
again.
No, nightmare.
Nightmare, exactly. That agree for me even more. I cannot discuss Tat again. And this is really interesting in light of what's happening with the media and the palace today. So I remember vividly, it was a September Thursday evening, and I was rung up by Louisa Parker Bowles, Camilla's niece, who was then managing director of Tatler. And she said, don't worry, it's all been sorted with the Condé Nast lawyers, William and Kate, you know, they're not going to sue. But the one thing is, you absolutely must not discuss this. So you can imagine my consternation on Sunday when I go and get the Sunday newspapers, and front cover of the Mail on Sunday is Kate's victory over Tatler. Double page spread on me, absolutely,
oh,
you know.
Oh my
going,
God.
Yes. And I knew that Tatler hadn't leaked it. I knew that I hadn't leaked it. So I knew that the leak had come straight from Kensington Palace. And a year later, the journalist who was asked to write the piece verified that William had rung up the editor of the Mail on Sunday at that Friday morning, and somebody from his office went to have lunch with them, and they planted that piece. The royal family manipulate the media. I'm talking about the print media, the British print media, in a way you simply would not believe. So, for example, in the mainstream press, it is verboten to write a piece in support of Meghan and Harry.
Wait. So when you say, you know, they must say this narrative about Meghan and Harry, I mean, you mean this in the way that journalists all sort of move as a pack, right? It's not an actual dictum.
No, it is an absolute dictum, spoken and unspoken, that the newspapers do not want and will not print pieces that are wholly positive to Meghan and Harry, and you cannot write anything negative really about William or Kate.
But this is because they're monarchists at the core?
No, this is because of the deals that have been done between the palace and the editors of these papers. Okay. If you look at the Telegraph Act, you will see four or five pieces in absolute eulogising praise of the Princess of Wales. Mm-hmm. And then the chances are on the same day, every piece about Meghan and Harry is negative. They literally take a baseball bat and bash this couple to pieces. And it is because of this that I have completely changed my view towards Meghan, but also towards Harry. So when Mexit happened, I thought, well, it was ill-conceived and they were acting in probably quite a petulant way, and couldn't they have made it work? And what I have seen from the books that I've written about the monarchy is that the reason the British monarchy has survived and prospered when other European monarchies has failed is they are utterly ruthless, and their absolute goal is you have to have the spotlight on the monarch and the heir. And anybody else who comes into the picture and takes too much of the oxygen or too much of the limelight, you see, is pushed out. We saw it with Diana. We saw it with Fergie. We've seen it with Harry and Meghan. They were too threatening as a unit to Kate and William.
But isn't Meghan so frustrating? I mean, isn't there a part of you that's so frustrated by her, entire persona, her, I never Googled my husband before I met him, you know, or do you actually now look at the stories that she's told and think, God, she was telling the truth all along?
Well, I actually think I do now. Would you need to Google Harry? I mean, he's so world famous. I mean, I don't know. But I'm sure she has very self-absorbed tendencies, don't we all? But I do think what's incredibly unfair is that there was the tide turned, and I believe, Harry, that was instigated from within the palace. Mm-hmm. And you cannot fight the palace narrative.
And when you say the palace, I mean, who are we talking about? I mean, are we talking about Charles and Camilla and a couple of designated press officers?
Well, let me say that nothing is leaked without the nod from the principal. So, for example, this latest thing about William and Kate being snapped, being filmed by a member of the public in the Windsor Farm Shop.
It's been 12 weeks since we saw any footage of the Princess of Wales, but now here she is, walking with husband Prince William, carrying her shopping and smiling and looking relaxed.
An onlooker in Windsor said Kate was out shopping with William and she looked happy and well.
I do not believe that for a second. This was set up. It is a deal with the Sun. The conspiracy theories are off the Richter scale. And suddenly, guess what? We've seen Kate. And a member of the public allegedly saw her popping over to the Windsor Farm Shop, to sell lovely produce near their base in Windsor. And there is William and Kate on a Saturday morning, William in his baseball cap, buying bags of bread and carrying it out.
The Prince and Princess of Wales, just like thousands of other couples did this week, weekend, dressed down on their shopping trip, and onlookers said they looked happy and relaxed.
Now, firstly, if a member of the public had really filmed that and sold it to a paper, the palace would have seen that as an invasion of privacy and would have come down. This has not happened. There's absolute silence in the palace. But of course it's been set up. Of course it's been arranged. Although I did agree with a BBC journalist who looked at the picture of Kate and said, are we sure that's Kate? Mm-hmm. I mean, God knows.
So what about Kate's hospital stay? I mean, how do we interpret this? Why has it all played out like this?
I think that the king has handled his cancer and his illness pitch perfect. He's told us what's going on. We've seen photographs of him. You know, he's doing the work that he can and he's keeping in touch with the public. Why she had to manufacture this photograph, God, I just don't know. So I'm as a loss like everybody else.
This photo released by Kensington Palace over the weekend only made matters worse.
How did a simple photograph of a supposedly happy Princess Catherine and her children turn into a worldwide photoshopping scandal?
Another plot twist in the whodunit Photoshop saga, with the Duchess herself claiming responsibility for the DIY job, saying, like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing. I wanted to express my apologies for any confusion the family photograph we shared yesterday caused.
My intuitive response is that she was told to produce a happy Mother's Day photograph and she cobbled something together. It obviously wasn't properly censored by the palace. But one thing is for certain, with the palace and the British press, the truth is very far hidden.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now, I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with just a few taps. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in cancelled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/infamous. That's rocketmoney.com/infamous. rocketmoney.com/infamous.
Anybody who has a sibling knows that sibling fights are unavoidable. But what if every fight you had was under a microscope, on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince Harry and Prince William. They'd been each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother. But that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties. Wondery's podcast, Disentel, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started. It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle? Or was it something that began much earlier? Follow Disentel on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So what happened next with Kate made us all feel like assholes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because Kate put out a video saying that she had been diagnosed with cancer.
In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London. And at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present.
In this video, she's sitting on a bench in a garden that's dotted with wildflowers. She's staring directly at the camera while she's telling the public about one of the worst things you can ever go through.
My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment.
K
Kate explains that she and William had decided to handle the diagnosis privately while trying to figure out how to tell their kids.
Yeah, and I mean, my heart really broke for her hearing her say this. I'm sure lots of people listening to this felt the same way. I mean, she's only 42 years old and she has three young kids. I can't even imagine how I would handle telling my kids that I had cancer, let alone doing it after the whole world knows.
Right. Like the fact that she even had to make a video saying this in the first place and that she had to look so perfect while doing it is really kind of sad.
Yeah, she clearly had to put this video out to quash all the conspiracy theories that had emerged.
Right, and it being cancer really makes the internet rumor mill feel in poor taste. And it makes me feel really guilty for playing into it. Like, we're all so used to having just unfettered 24/7 access to celebrities that not having access to them made everyone lose their goddamn minds. But knowing what we know about the palace's press strategy, what do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, it's possible that Kate just said, absolutely, I will not speak of this, right? And that's definitely one option. It's also possible that optics-wise, the palace thought Kate and Charles couldn't really be diagnosed with cancer publicly right at the same time. This would definitely spawn a million conspiracy theories about why the family was getting cancer. But that also hangs Kate out to dry because it creates this information vacuum that then allows the conspiracy theories to emerge even more, right?
Right. And there's no denying that Kate's reputation really seems to have been damaged, like with this ridiculous Photoshop fail. Like it all just looked so bad.
Yeah. Well, we still don't know who did the Photoshop. Was that Kate's press strategy? Was that Charles? Was that the palace? It's all very confusing. But it definitely seems like another situation of the palace favoring the ruling monarch, Charles, in this case. Everyone else sort of be damned.
Right. And that's kind of what happened with Meghan, right? She became the fall guy for lots of things. And we asked Anna what she thought about that.
I've completely changed my narrative on Harry and Meghan because I think they were telling the truth about a lot of these stories. So, for example, the Tightgate story.
Tell people what that was.
So Tightgate, I mean, this is we're so mad in Britain that this becomes front page news. You know, there's people dying all over the world, but whether the bridesmaids at Meghan and Harry's wedding wear tights is like the most important matter of the day. I was told that Kate and Meghan had this row over whether the bridesmaids should wear tights because Meghan is very Californian and thought the little girls didn't need to wear tights, but Kate is rigid in, which is why she's such a good member of the royal family in the protocol, that you always have to have your legs encased in these really unattractive, you know, beige new tights or whatever. And anyway, so they had a row. And then both sides say that the other made each other cry. So Meghan's story is Kate made her cry, and Kate's story is actually Meghan made her cry. But what's interesting is nobody came out from the palace and backed Meghan's story, and yet they came out and they backed Kate's story. Mm. In one sense, it's all such ridiculous froth. You know, I kind of slightly disgusted myself for even having this conversation because it's so absurd. But what I think there's a deeper meaning and a deeper context, which is there is definitely no question in the British press an absolute movement to discredit Harry and Meghan and the need to bolster William and Kate, and they have to be sanctified in the press and they are these saints. You know, Kate wears a jacket and there's a whole thing in the Telegraph of, oh, the way the Princess of Wales has reinvented the blazer. I just find it so painful in a way for the Sussexes. And I'm not saying that they didn't. I'm sure they've behaved badly, and I'm sure there's a lot of spoiled, entitled behaviour as well. But I really do feel that Harry was absolutely on the money when he said we had to leave, because once this tsunami of bad press comes against you, it is very, very difficult to rise above that.
I mean, I think you're right on trend. You know, Harry was not a historic figure. And now, well, look, she's Wallace Simpson, right? She's somebody who will be remembered 100 years from now.
All right, to come in here for a minute, Wallace Simpson, if you don't know, was this divorced American socialite who, back in the 1930s, was in a relationship with Prince Edward. Edward, by the way, is a very complicated character who, it later emerged, was a Nazi sympathizer. Anyway, Edward abdicated in order to marry Wallace, and his younger brother became king. Wallace was painted as the villain in all this.
I mean, it's very interesting, the parallel with Wallace Simpson, because when I think that what's happened to both women is that there has been an establishment bid to discredit them. So I decided about a decade ago that I wanted to make my purpose to rehabilitate women whom history had treated badly. And that's why I wrote this book about Wallace. And what was fascinating to me was when I did a deep dive into her genuine character and was able to penetrate her circle and people who knew her and were still alive, the Wallace I encountered was completely different from what I would say her fictional alter ego is. So, you know, everyone had this narrative that she was this domineering, pushy bitch who wanted to be Queen of England and stole a beloved king from his throne. I couldn't have encountered a more different woman, but the establishment did not want Edward on the throne. And so the whole bid was to discredit her as a way of getting rid of him. And now I wonder, well, are we seeing an exact echo of this? I don't think that Meghan's like Wallace Simpson, because Meghan had it all. She had the royal wedding. She had the HRH. She had the now king walking her up the aisle. You know, poor Wallace didn't have one member of the royal family at her wedding. And Wallace was incredibly dignified. She never once spoke out about her royal in-laws. Mm. And she had far more grievance than Meghan. And she retained this absolute loyalty to her husband and to the monarchy while feeling incredibly injured. And I felt, well, you know, Meghan does bleat on about it, or has bleated on Oprah and The Cut and whatever. Yeah. But now, you know, 2 years later, I'm looking back and I'm thinking, well, is this a repeat of history? She is being discredited by the establishment. She is being discredited by the broadsheet press in this country. She hasn't really been given a chance. And it seems to me that there is a great similarity. And people have always said, oh, you're going to do Meghan next. And I always said, no, I wouldn't. Well, maybe in 5 years I will, because she does need rehabilitating.
Tina Brown said to me once, like, she is a go-getter, Meghan, right? You've seen Tina say this publicly. You know, why is that so bad? She's an American. She's a go-getter. And the machinations are very obvious to people who watch this kind of thing. And the way that she's sort of gone from like, okay, well, I'm going to try to be high up in Hollywood. I'm going to try to be the next Shonda Rhimes. Well, now I'll just do some spreads and some oven mitts and, you know, we'll do it at American Riviera Orchard. You know, it seems like, okay, I'm settling back down to where I can sell things. So there's a sort of undignified way in which Meghan has gone about this process. But you may be very right that she was up against a brick wall, and instead of just knocking her head against it, she said, I'm just going to get out of here. This is not worth it to me. I'm an independent 36, 37-year-old woman who does not need this in my life. You know, I've got my husband. We got a bit of money. Let's just get out of here and try to make it on our own.
Well, I think that you make a very good point there. I think that it became so toxic for them. I think that they could not access the truth. Harry absolutely knew that, you know, the palace were leaking stories about them, that the narrative had to be, you know, to discredit them in order to refocus the spotlight on William and Kate, that there was an envy after their successful foreign tours. They had star quality as a couple, just as Diana did. No question about that. And the royal family don't like that. If you're not the monarch or the heir and you're getting too much attention, it leads to trouble. And that has been shown historically. I mean, what's really interesting is after the abdication, one of the things that just made my heart bleed for Wallace Simpson, but actually made me realise how incredibly perspicacious and emotionally intelligent she was, is she said that in those days, of course, you didn't have internet trolls and everything. She had literal hate letter coming. And she said, every morning, my world falls to pieces on my breakfast tray, as she received all this hate mail and death threats. And she said, I knew the truth about myself. My friends knew the truth. I knew that I couldn't convince anyone else. So I had to live with that. So she came to a kind of internal arrangement with herself about who she was. Now, you could say every celebrity in the world might benefit from trying that. If people don't want to see, hear, believe, experience your authenticity, they're not going to. And she knew she was up against this absolutely ruthless bastion of power.
Right. I mean, it's so funny to me hearing you talk about all this and the control that the monarchy has over the press, because I grew up in Dubai, which is not known for being a bastion of democracy, let's say. And every day on the front page of the newspaper, there would be a different photograph of a different sheikh, like shaking hands with some diplomat. It was very clear that this was state-controlled media. And so it's sort of shocking because you don't think about that with regards to the British press. But what you're saying is like there really are all these sort of deals and access going on. And the other thing I wanted to put a fine point on is that like it really seems like Meghan and Harry have been set up as the foil to William and Kate.
Exactly. And that's an echo of the Windsors, that Wallace was set up the foil. They then became the enemy to make Edward's younger brother, who then became king, George and the late Queen Mother, had to be seen to be the perfect monarch and wife, the perfect family. There's historical precedent for this pattern playing out.
I also wanted to ask, what role has Princess Diana played in all of this? Because, you know, my perspective is that she punctured this or punctured the royal family.
I think Diana tried to puncture it, but actually I think it's gone very much back to its default setting. So she wanted to speak the truth. She tried to tell the world, look, I'm viewed as this fairy tale princess. I'm the most famous woman in the world, but it is not a fairy tale. Mm. And actually, it's incredibly difficult for me because my husband is in love with another woman and this is my truth. She couldn't live with the facade. Of course, nobody in the royal family could understand that because they thought, well, all the aristocracy have affairs and, you know, she was born into that. Why did she accept it? But she couldn't. She was modern in that way. And that's why people loved her, that she felt like us. She was emotionally flawed and she was going to show people the truth of who she was. And there's a real danger in that, in a sense, because they become so relatable that they no longer feel so regal. But I don't think anything has changed since then. I don't think people have really learned from that, because Meghan's tried to tell her truth or her version of her truth, whatever, and they're just discredited. And Diana was discredited. She was written off as mad. Charles's friends in the establishment at the time said she was emotionally unstable. And where Kate is so brilliant is she clearly does exactly what she's told. She doesn't speak out.
So who is Kate Middleton, really? I mean, is she just like this automaton, or what do you think her personality is like behind the scenes?
Well, that's a really good question, and one that I felt that even in my Tatler article, I didn't particularly answer, because I think she's very controlled, and that's what makes her the most perfect future monarch, because we don't really know what she's thinking, do we?
We want to shape fairer, safer, kinder, more equal societies. Societies that seek the common good and a better future together.
She just seems very dutiful, which is the main ingredient for success in the royal family. And she never really lets slip any sort of real character traits, does she? I'm sorry, I know I'm going to be pilloried for this, but I do agree with Hilary Mantel that she just does seem like the perfect mannequin.
And just to say for our listeners, so Hilary Mantel is this Man Booker winning novelist who kind of caused a big outrage in the UK, where she gave this lecture where she described Kate, as you put in your article, as gloss varnished. And then the press went crazy and said that this was a vicious and venomous attack. And even Prime Minister David Cameron had to come out and say something about this lecture given by somebody else, which one of the big sticking points for Meghan was that the palace wouldn't sue or wouldn't stick up for her after her letter was published. And yet they'll come out swinging for Kate.
I think that's absolutely right. I think Meghan felt really aggrieved by that they constantly put out statements about Kate, and when they didn't back up Meghan, and you know, there's the absolute evidence for that. And I think that also, you know, the brouhaha over Hilary Mantel was absurd again, because for example, for a woman who's just had given birth to have to come out on the steps of the hospital looking pitch perfect with blow-dried hair, with her tights on, with her dress, and hold her baby, what Hilary Mantel was saying is that there is something completely dehumanising about that, and it is like being a shop mannequin, and Meghan wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And of course, instead of us all saying, gosh, that's so modern and well done her, why should you know, postpartum parade yourself in front of the world's media, and she did it at her pace, which I think I really understood. But no, she cannot be celebrated for that. She has to be absolutely eviscerated. Imagine if Meghan had an operation and decided not to, or decision was she wasn't going to be seen. Everyone would go berserk. They would be criticizing her. They would absolutely flay her alive.
This is where
I feel like this strategy falls apart is because the press and media is not just the newspapers anymore.
Exactly, Natalie. You're so right. And I think that is what has given the palace a real shock in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
That they have thought they are controlling the narrative, and they very much can in the print press and the news channels here, but not the social media. And that's why they're in such turmoil, because they are unaccustomed to this incredible backlash. And I think that there's they need to modernize really fast. And there's a kind of arrogant entitlement that says, no, we'll do it our way. And then they had no idea that, as you say, if the public aren't fools. There is nobody, I think, unless they are, you know, blinkered to a worrying degree, who could look at what's going on and think, oh, this is all normal, nice, lovely royal family. She's just been a bit ill, poorly, and she's going to appear after Easter. Right. I mean, you'd literally have to have crawled out of a cave to have that view, surely.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. On each episode of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop, comedians join host Misha Brown to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question. Who thought this was a good idea? Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? When they launched their Pepsi points system, they never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So, but where do we go from all this? What does it look like in 10 years? If Charles is ailing, we'll have King William. What will that look like? You know, do they just continue to be these sort of cardboard cutouts?
I think it's a really good question. And as I just said, I think that if we do want the monarchy to continue, it needs to be a combination of more modern, but adhering to the kind of traditional diktats of, as we say, be seen to be believed, as the Queen always said. My personal view is they've lost so much credibility, and they've let too much daylight in, and they are like a kind of British eccentric Beverly Housewives, you know, mad, toxic family living in a massive palace. And I think, you know, the real tragedy for me, actually just wrapping up and going back to Meghan and Harry, is that I think that they could have been such an asset to the monarchy in terms of the Commonwealth, and having Meghan as a woman of colour in the British royal family was hugely modernising for them. But the problem is that the British monarchy don't know how to modernise, and they don't really know how to update, and they only know how to operate in their antiquated style, which is not working. Yeah. It just is not working.
It's not working.
I used to be an ardent royalist and monarchist, but I am actually so appalled by the treatment of Harry and Meghan. I mean, I spoke at the Oxford Union debate after the Oprah Winfrey defending the royal family, and now I have to say I would be on the other side of the chamber. I really would.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Well, we believe that you are on trend in this grand tapestry of the epic story of the British royal family, which is, you know, gripping the world at the moment. I mean, your book is fabulous. It's about Wallace Simpson. Can you tell us about, you've got two books that people should know about?
Oh, that's very kind. Well, yes, the first book I wrote was called Lara, The Untold Love Story Behind Dr. Zhivago. And my great uncle was Boris Pasternak, who wrote Dr. Zhivago.
So fascinating.
And, nobody...
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh my God.
That's right. And nobody had really celebrated his mistress and muse, the character of Olga, who was played so memorably by Julie Christie in the film. So I came out with the first book that really positioned her and said, look, yes, Boris was a brilliant man and a brilliant writer, but if it wasn't for this woman, not only would Dr. Zhivago never have been completed, it would never have been published. And so I was the first person to come out and celebrate her in my book, Lara. And then it was when the press were saying, oh my gosh, you've absolutely repositioned and rehabilitated this woman, that I thought, yes, that's my purpose. I want to do that for the rest of my life. And then it was while watching The Crown, and it was so factually incorrect about Wallis Simpson, and I had this light bulb moment. I thought, oh my gosh, Wallace. And then I went back and I did all this research.
Well, we look forward to what you do next. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
That's it for this week, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. So we'll be back next week with another story. But until then, if you're interested in princesses, this time from the other side of the world, scroll pretty far back in your feed to listen to our series entitled Dubai's Missing Princesses. It's about the women in the UAE who tried to run away and then actually went missing. All right, see you soon. Thanks again for being here.